morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here on another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Happy Easter. I took a little Easter break there, Tim. Tim did a solo episode. You did fantastic, Tim. I was uber impressed. It was short, but very concise, jam-packed with information. What do you think?
Thank you.
You're gonna leave me in the dust? Okay.
It would be nice to know ahead of time if you were taking time off. That's all I'll say.
Did I not let you know?
Not Friday or Monday, actually. So
yeah, I'm not great with spreading information. Monday was a shocker because I literally got up thinking I was going to work. And my wife said, no, you're not. You're staying home. And I was like, all right, looks like I'm staying home.
let's just turn our text into a group chat with Danielle. So I'm always kind of in the loop.
Not even a group chat. Just directly go to her. Go to the source. And I tell everybody this because people will ask me, hey, what are you doing this weekend? Can we do this? I'm having a poker night. You want to come over? Can we do this? I'm like, don't ask me. It's not up to me. I don't know what we're doing with my life. I literally ask hour to hour, what are we doing tonight? What are we doing tomorrow? I guess day to day. So I'll wake up, what do we got tonight? And she'll tell me. It's a very liberating type of thing where you just have no control. People always think, and this is where I had to learn this. People try to control everything because they think it makes them freer. I can do all this. Like I'm in control of this, this, and this, and this, and this. And then you're a slave to just being in control. I have no control over anything. And it's the most freeing sense, Tim. All I have to make sure is there's money in the bank and there's food in the fridge. Not even food in the fridge because I don't buy money in the bank and I protect the house. That's all I got to do. Everything else, I just don't, it's not on my radar whatsoever. That's it. It's such a freeing feeling.
Not to sound all like fancy spancy, but Aristotle talked a lot about that. So I think what you're saying is deeper than you realize. Good for you.
Who is that?
He was some guy, I don't know, China, I think.
No, there's lots of people that talk about it. But anyways, sorry, I wasn't here. I apologize, but we're back. It's a Tuesday. Tim's going on the road, so we figured we'd do one Tuesday, maybe Thursday, maybe Friday, and make up for the lost shows because there's a lot to talk about. There's really a lot of milestones going down. Guys getting 1,000 points, guys getting 100 points, breaking the 150 point plateau, single season records being broken. It's been a pretty big weekend for records. My guy Pavs gets 1,000. That was very impressive. Giroux gets 1,000 on the same night, by the way. Very impressive by him. Doesn't happen that often anymore. I think it's more common to see 1,000 games than 1,000 points. So it's a pretty big milestone. The one thing I don't understand is why does the whole team have to come out and congratulate him? Is that something that's always been? I guess I've never been on a team with a guy who's gotten 1,000 points. Is it normal? Does that happen all the time? Like in baseball, if a guy gets a big milestone, you know, when LeBron set the points mark and they shut the game down, I didn't like that. It's like finish the game. Why are we stopping everything just because you scored some points? Keep the game going.
Well, LeBron is a different category, but you'll see guys like break a hits record, a home run record in baseball. The team greets them at home plate, but they don't really stop the game. It's just an extra maybe minute or so. Same with hockey. Like they all come on the ice and congratulate them and then they move on. But yeah, it is kind of cool that they did it in the same. There's a lot of records broken this weekend, like you said. Connor McDavid has 150 points. He's the fifth, sixth player to ever do it. Obviously, Gretzky did it many times. Lemieux did it a handful of times, too. But really special territory there. Yzerman, Esposito, Bernie Nichols are the other guys who have done it. And then the Bruins set a record. Most wins in a single season with 63, two games to play. They're 2 points away from the points record. And then in that same night, Pastrnak scores 60th goal. I think he ended up with 61 or 62 because he had a hat trick, which was also his 300th goal of his career. So like all these things combining all at once is pretty cool.
See, is there an asterisk next to the Bruins 63 wins because of the way overtime works now? Because back before the overtime got revamped with the shootout with the necessary winner, someone has to get 2 points. There was ties. So does that taint it a little bit, or is this kind of the like in baseball with the home run mark where we know McGuire and Sosa were juicing, Barry Bonds, they have the mark, but everybody kind of just thinks, okay, you know what, it's still Roger Maris, or maybe it's Aaron Judge now. So is does this have a tinge to it where it's like, okay, we get it. You have the most points. You have the most wins. How many of those wins are overtime shootout wins that maybe wouldn't have been there because it was harder to get an overtime win back in the day because it was still 5-on-5 and there was no such thing as the shootout. Does that ruin it for you as a Bruins fan, that me bringing that up?
You're asking the wrong guy, John. It doesn't ruin it at all for me. Someone else can make that argument, but you won't hear that from me.
I think it does. I think it's different. I think there should be a different set of rules, but awards. Like, okay, pre-shootout, post-shootout. Pre-steroids, post-steroids. I think it just makes sense because everybody's like, oh, but they got steroids out of the game. This is a whole other podcast. They didn't get it out of the game. They're just better at hiding it. Let's just put that aside because there's lots of guys who are juicing in all these sports. Anyways, not hockey. Hockey's clean. What else is happening, Tim?
Another big record. Erik Karlsson had 100 points last night. Really cool. Did you see that?
Big debate. Norris or no?
I've seen this a lot lately. I honestly think, and I can't imagine any arguments against it, there should be two defenseman awards.
I agree.
Best offensive, and then you either do best all around or best defensive. But a lot of times it can be the same guy. You can make that argument. Victor Hedman 2 or 3 years ago was the both of those awards, right? Yossi could be both of those awards, but Erik Karlsson couldn't. And so he should get a different trophy than the Norris, I think, but not
the Bobby Orr, the Bobby Orr trophy.
Yeah, perfect.
Make it makes sense. They have it for forwards. They have the Maurice Rocker-Richard most goals, and they have the Hart, which is theoretic. Hart could be a defenseman. It's usually a forward. So imagine if a defenseman just clean sweep, scored the most goals. It'd be a beautiful thing. It'll never happen again. But yes, good for Erik Karlsson. For what he's done, it's a very impressive feat. Because when you look at that San Jose Sharks roster, teams must cue in on him, right? Because he drives their offense. That's all he does. I think out of all the goals they've scored, he's been a part of almost a third of them, if not more. So you're going to cue in on this guy, and he's still able to put up points. You don't want to be the team that gives up the 100th point against. So good for him. He sucks at defense. It's just atrocious. But he's a nuclear option. He's so good at offense. And it's nice to see him resurrect his career because he was down and out. No one's going to trade for him. Don't get me wrong. He's not going to be an asset. But he's fun to watch on the ice. He's very entertaining. He is like, what makes him different from Cale Makar? Is Cale Makar better at defense than Erik Karlsson? Or does Cale Makar just have a better security blanket than Devin Toews?
Probably a little bit of both, but I think Makar definitely is better defensively. And it's funny, when he scored his 100th point last night, the first thing I thought of, I thought of you, and then the first thing I checked was, how many points does Jack Hughes have? Because that's the other one we're close. Watching. He's at 96 with 2 games left. So very possible, probably not statistically, he won't get 4 points in 2 games, but very easily could. So
I think he will.
I hope he does.
The Devils are very, very good. I think he will get 100 points. And it's good. He's had a fantastic year. You know who else has had a fantastic year? The Toronto Maple Leafs. They've gone under the radar. They've done exactly what they should have done this season. They had some issues with Austin Matthews early on. He had some injuries. He wasn't scoring. There was some uncertainty there. He's found his game. Mitch Marner's been fantastic throughout the whole season, set career highs in points. John Tavares has been fantastic throughout the whole season. They've done exactly what they needed to do. They flew under the radar. They've won their games. Now they enter the playoffs. Well, hold the phone. There was some little drama, Tim, going into the playoffs for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They just shellacked the Montreal Canadiens. What happened at the end of this game that everybody's all up in arms about?
Yeah, I think this was Saturday night. They had an emergency backup goalie. I forget what's going on with Matt Murray or whoever their backup was, but Samsonov starts. They're up 7-1 late in the game against the Canadiens, and I don't have it in front of me. There's like less than 2 minutes left, and they bring in the emergency backup goalie to get his moment. You know, the game is over, is out of hand, and they just brought him in to help him out, give him a cool thing he'll talk about for the rest of his life. Well, the Canadiens didn't like it, and so nothing ended up happening in the game on the ice. And then Chris Weidman, the defenseman for the Canadiens, was interviewed, and he said he, quote, they'll get what they deserve in a few weeks, talking about the Maple Leafs. And obviously, he's talking about them being eliminated. He's not happy. I think that they thought it was disrespectful to them to bring in an emergency backup when you didn't have to. There's nothing wrong with Samsonov. Usually those guys only get in in the direst of circumstances, but it's game, what, 80 at that point for both teams, I think. The game was out of hand. I didn't think it was that bad, but obviously Weidman took issue with it. What's your thought on this?
You know, I think I'm on the side of the Leafs. If you don't want them to put the emergency goalie in, maybe don't get smoked 7-1. Maybe don't make it possible for them to put the backup goalie from the University of Toronto in. Make it a competitive game. You're getting just rickrolled 7-1. You know what I mean? Shut your mouth. You have nothing to say here, Chris Weidman. Nothing at all. You just got smoked. So keep your mouth shut. Like, if I was the Leafs, I would throw together some kind of tweet in a couple weeks of him golfing, or I don't know, something cheesy like that, and be like, oh yeah, at least we'll be playing hockey and you'll be working on your tan, or something like that. But I'm petty, and that's why people don't like me. But it's just, why? Like, I get it, you're disrespected, but instead of focusing on the Leafs embarrassing you, maybe do some introspection and be like, why are they able to embarrass me? Oh, it's because we're losing 7-1 in an NHL hockey game. That's why. Good on the Leafs. I like it. I thought it was a nice move, classy move. Give this guy some NHL time. He'll talk about it for the rest of his life. It's a really nice moment. I like when teams do this. And if you don't want it to happen, don't get beat by that much. You know, it's just, I don't like that. The problem is emblematic of players just not figuring out the real issue here. The real issue is you're a bad defenseman and you're a bad defensive hockey team and you gave up 7 goals. But instead of focusing on that and being upset at your goaltender and your defense and your forwards and your coaches, you're upset at the Leafs because they put in a different goaltender. Oh, they'll get what they deserve in a few weeks. The quote should have been, we should have been better defensively. I'm sorry. That's it. So good. The Leafs should do that more. They should have just pulled the goalie and played with one player and embarrassed him even worse. Because, I don't know, Chris Weidman. Who is he?
It's a good question. So let's talk about the Leafs for a second, because it was great. I watched only like 30 minutes of hockey last night, maybe less, and I saw a lot just because the games were at the end and a couple of them were in overtime. The Leafs beat the Panthers last night in overtime, really close game. The Panthers did get a 1 point, which is huge for them.
Crucial, yeah.
Yeah, but it was a weird play, and John Tavares scored the game-winning goal in a breakaway in a 3-on-3 overtime, where it was back and forth, and he was on the ice for like 2 minutes, 27 seconds, I think. He was totally burnt out, but he still beat Matthew Tkachuk to the open puck and then scored in the breakaway. And it was a weird play because Tkachuk, I was pretty kind of critical. I was like, how the heck did he create? He wasn't even moving fast. Tkachuk just wasn't hustling back on Tavares, but Tkachuk in the replay, he called for the goalie Lyon to come out and play the puck. So he's like shouting from the other blue line, the length of the ice, saying, come out and play it. And he didn't have enough time, and Tavares scored. And so the Panthers, they did get that crucial point. So they're sitting right now with 92 points, still ahead of the wild card, still in that first wild card spot. But it's not looking great. They have one game left and they play the Carolina Hurricanes, who is playing for something. They want to get that first seed in the Metro because they don't have to play the Rangers. And we'll talk about the other teams too. But what do you think about the Panthers there?
It is what it is. And we'll talk about it with the Flames too. This whole overtime structure, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. The 3-on-3, it's not real hockey. I know it's exciting and it's fun early on in the season, but then when you get down to times like this where points are crucial, every point matters, as we're seeing right now, and the team loses on a 3-on-3 game, I don't like it. The Hurricanes, they need to win. I think they'll beat the Florida Panthers when they play, and the Panthers will be out. And it's a shame because they are the hottest team in the NHL. They're playing great. It would have been fun to see them in the playoffs. I know I'm maybe changing my tone from last week, but I like what they've been doing. They've been playing really good hockey, and it would have been great to see them challenge either the Hurricanes or the Bruins. I think they could have made some waves, but right now, as it stands, I think you're right. I think they go in, they lose to the Hurricanes because the Hurricanes desperately need a win. They've lost their third straight now, and they're in shambles. I don't know what's going on in Carolina, but it's too bad. And we saw it with the Flames as well. But yeah, Florida, They had a good push, you know what I mean, from where they were to where they are right now. And they're still first place in the wild card seeding. So things can happen. The Islanders could lose. Pittsburgh could lose a couple. Buffalo could lose. It's possible. But just the way things are trending, the Sabres are on fire. Pittsburgh's been winning some hockey games. The Islanders look like they're playing fairly good hockey. And Florida has a tough last out, whereas the Islanders get to go on to play Montreal. That's a tap-in win from what we've seen recently. Pittsburgh finishes up with the Blackhawks and the Blue Jackets. So you think they're going to lose those two games, the Blackhawks and the Blue Jackets? They're going to leapfrog Florida. And the outside team, the Buffalo Sabres, have been beating everybody who they have no business beating. They beat the aforementioned Carolina Hurricanes. They squeaked out a win versus the Rangers last night in a shootout. They faced the Devils, who they have no business beating, but they've just been shellacking all the top teams in the East, so why not? Then they finish up with Ottawa and Columbus. The Sabres could rally with five straight wins and get into the playoffs. It's insane. I love it. It's exactly what we predicted, because there's so many good teams in the East, it's going to come down to the last game. So I know I'm revamping my predictions right now. I think it'll be the Islanders and the Sabres. Those are my final two teams in the playoffs. And I think the Sabres will get the first wild card, and I think the Islanders will get the second wild card.
The Penguins? You don't think they're going to beat those last two teams?
I do.
And they're still not going to make it?
Let me revamp. I don't think the Penguins get in. I think they'll lose one of those games. Yeah.
Okay.
Buffalo runs. Hold on.
Yeah.
This is my heart talking here. I want the Sabres to get in. But yeah, you're probably right. Pittsburgh will get in and the Islanders will get in. I think those will be the two teams, and Buffalo will falter. But ideally, I'd like to see Buffalo get in just because they'd be fun in the playoffs. They really would be.
Yeah, the Islanders, though, I don't think they did not play well last night. And they lost to the Washington Capitals, which is the team that they should be beating. They went down 3-0 early in the first, and they just had no answer. And they were asked after the game. Brock Nelson spoke, Zach Parise spoke. They all said, I don't know. Why did you guys struggle? Why can't you win this crucial game? I don't know. We don't have answers. And so that doesn't really sound like a team that has it all together. And so to not beat Washington, who's been out of the playoffs for a couple weeks now, and now you probably want to beat the Canadiens, but even if they do, there's a solid chance that it's not enough, because the Penguins win out, which I think they will. And I think the Panthers, if they can beat the Hurricanes, it's tough. That was a game that they needed to win and they didn't. Meanwhile, I think Penguins, who was the only team in this group that had the night off, they're watching and they like what they see. Islanders lose, Panthers lose, Sabres win, but they're still a long shot. Meanwhile, Penguins, all they have to do is beat the Blackhawks and the Blue Jackets. I think if they win both of those games, they automatically make the playoffs.
Yeah, the Penguins win, they're in. That's their situation right now. The same with the Florida Panthers. If they win, they're in. So if they take care of their business, they're going to make the playoffs. But we'll see. Only time will tell. Hey, the East is tough. Columbus could throw up a pretty good game. Pittsburgh could be in trouble, but it will be exciting. What's going on in the West, Tim?
Yeah, Winnipeg, they beat the Sharks last night, 6-2, I think it was. So they're sitting at the top with 93 points, and they basically are in a spot where they only need one more point across their final two games. So as long as they don't lose in regulation, they're going to make the playoffs. But they have a couple of tough games with Minnesota and then Colorado, so it won't be easy. Meanwhile, I'm going to come back to Calgary in a second because I think we'll spend some time there. But Nashville won again. They beat the Flames last night. They're at 88 points, and they have two games left, the same two teams as Winnipeg.
They're Minnesota, 90 points, Tim.
Sorry, in Minnesota and Colorado. And so the difference is that both of those games are at home for them. Winnipeg plays both of those games on the road, so that could play a factor too. But they have the same amount of remaining games left against the same two teams, so it's kind of poetic in a way. But meanwhile, Calgary, with that loss, are officially eliminated from playoff contention. John, you've prepared a little bit of a statement?
I haven't. It's really tough. I wanted them to make the playoffs, and the way they went down was a microcosm of their whole season. It really was. They couldn't get timely goal scoring. Markstrom did play good. I'll give him that. But they lost a goaltender battle because UC Saros was spectacular. Absolutely phenomenal. That guy, for his size, the way the goaltending's going with you have to be above 6'4", 6'5", you have to be a certain weight in order to even show up on scouts' radars anymore. He is a fantastic, I can see why they got rid of Pekka Rinne. I can see why they've just focused all their energy on him, because that guy, Tim, did you see some of the saves he was making? He's fantastic. He's an incredible goaltender. For a guy under 6 foot, that's very rare these days to be that incredibly good. You find me another goaltender in the league, Well, what's Shesterkin? He might be short too, but they're not very common these days. But yeah, he played great. And then they go to overtime. And it's just the whole season wrapped up in a nutshell. They stink. They get grade A chance after grade A chance. They can't bury it. They go to the shootout and they lose. They have 17 overtime or shootout losses this year. 17. Do you get that? If they convert half of those, they're walking into the playoffs. That gives them almost 100 points. It's insane how bad these guys are in 3-on-3 in the shootout. It's incredible. I don't know why they can't work on it. I touched on it last week when I said they don't have any high-end skill guys who can put the puck in the net. And I think I nailed the nail on the head. They don't have that guy who can score in 3-on-3 or a shootout when he has to. And it's proven. If they win, Tim, if they even get a quarter of those points, they're in the playoffs. It's so maddening.
Not 17 overtime and play and shootout losses, 30 one goal losses this season. So if you, they're going to miss the playoffs by probably 2 points, 3 points. If they just win three more games, it's crazy. So it's not even a quarter. It's the frustrating thing is like it was in their control. You had a chance. It was in your control. And with the season on the line, you can't beat Vancouver and Nashville.
Chicago.
These teams, yeah, Chicago. These were all sellers. And yeah. I get Vancouver's competitive and Nashville has surprised people, but these were sellers at the deadline. And you can't beat them. It's crazy.
It's really too bad. And then going back to the shootout thing, you look at Winnipeg, they have 3 overtime losses. They have 11 shootout wins, overtime wins. Like that's the difference right there. The Flames, they don't have that guy. They don't have the person who can just say, okay, lock him in. He's going to score a shootout goal half the time. That's it. They don't have it. But let's get to the controversy here. So they make it to a shootout. They tie the game. Beautiful goal by Backlund. Beautiful passing play. Ties the game up. They go to overtime. They get a plethora of chances. Rasmus Anderson, I don't know how he misses an empty net. A fantastic chance. The Flames are all over him. Toffoli has a one-timer from the slot, from the hash marks. UC Saros makes an incredible save. They go to overtime. Huberdeau starts. He scores. Fantastic. Who does Daryl Sutter, Tim, throw out for his next two choices? Now, here's the Calgary Flames lineup. You have Dylan Dubé, Tyler Toffoli, Elias Lindholm. You got Andrew Mangiapane. You got Backlund. You got Kadri. You got Coleman. You got Trevor Lewis, who's been around the way. And then a couple tough guys, Nick Ritchie and Milan Lucic. Not to mention Erasmus Anderson, who's 50% in shootouts, who's pretty good himself. Noah Hanifin, Nikita Zadorov, who's got just an absolute bazooka for a shot. Troy Stetcher, who we saw earlier in the game go posting in, who's got a missile-guided shot. You can throw him in there, kind of harken back to Ray Bourque days. Who does he put out there, Daryl Sutter? Good old farm boy Daryl Sutter.
The first one he put out after Huberdeau was Nazem Kadri, who at that point had one shootout goal in 5 opportunities this year. So not terrible. Exactly playing the hot hand.
Terrible pick. A guy who has openly vocalized how upset he is at the team and how they're being coached and how is everything going against. He's your third line center, and there's so many more skilled guys you could have picked instead of Nazem Kadri. But it gets worse. But don't wait. There's more.
Yeah, this is the real head scratcher. He goes down up and down the bench and goes to the very end and he says, Nick Ritchie, you're my man. You're my guy. And he put Nick Ritchie in, who I don't even know if he's ever shot in a shootout before, honestly.
No, he hasn't.
Yeah, definitely not this year. When the season on the line, you put it, what is he, a third liner at best? Third line,
maybe. But yeah, he's a third or fourth line left winger and he put him out there. I just don't understand the reasoning behind this.
Season on the line?
The guy's got 4 goals, 5 points all season. You know what I mean? Coming over from, he's got 13 goals all season if you include the stuff from Arizona. He's not like a sniper. He's 6'3", 240 pounds. Don't get me wrong, I like the big guys. But what are we doing here? What do you think he's just going with his gut? Going with the hunch?
So this is what he had to say. He was asked about it because you got Nick Ritchie over Tyler Toffoli sitting right there, Mangiapane sitting right there, Elias Lindholm sitting right there. And he was asked about why he went with Ritchie. He said, quote, not much difference if you do the percentages or odds. You're going on practices. You're going on guys that have scored against the goalie. That's not the point. It really had no bearing on the game. The difference is those great chances in overtime. Basically nothing. There's not a single meaningful word in that answer there. I don't know what he was thinking. On the flip side, if Nick Ritchie does score in the play and they end up making the playoffs, does he look like the veteran coach you want with his gut that oversees all analytics and you got to trust your gut and the guy who's been in the league for 40 years? Or do you, now that he didn't score, he looks like a dinosaur who's making poor decisions?
Yeah, we don't know what happens in practice because when I was in the league, they would do shootouts at the end of practice, and it did have a bearing on who would shoot during the games. It would be a round robin type thing where you go and you have a couple chances, whatever. But just looking at the roster, they've had a lot of shootouts this year, a lot of attempts, and Rasmus Anderson's ripping along at 50%. Tyler Foley's ripping along at 50%. Backlund hasn't scored. Adam Ruzicka hasn't scored. Dylan Dupe, and now Nick Ritchie. Those guys have not scored in a shootout. So why put him in that position? It's such a hyper, so stressful situation, and you're throwing Nick Ritchie out there. I don't understand the reasoning behind it. It doesn't make sense to me, and now they're out of the playoffs. So it is what it is. You reap what you sow. I get it, Daryl Sutter. I think he's a great coach. I think he has to go. I think he's still clinging to the... Just look at how they've assembled this team. It's just a very Daryl Sutter-type team. There's four lines, and I've applauded them for this, but it doesn't work. Maybe I'm off my rocker too. I thought they had a great roster, but they're missing that it factor. And now they're going to miss the playoffs. It's sad because I picked them to win the Stanley Cup. Not this year. I didn't pick them this year, last year. But I said they were going to have a really good shot at it this year. Markstrom played bad. They couldn't get timely scoring. And I get what he's saying about overtime. Toffoli had a couple grade A chances and he didn't score. So maybe he thought he couldn't solve UC Saros. You got to put him out there. You have to put Toffoli out there. Right? It just doesn't make sense to me. Anything else on this, Tim?
Well, okay, so just looking at the West, who gets that spot? Is it going to be Winnipeg? It seems like it will be, but Nashville's right there. Who do you think gets it?
Well, Winnipeg just has to pick up 1 point because they have more regulation wins. So Winnipeg will... They've been playing great. They'll squeak in with Seattle. That's it. The standings are set. I don't think there'll be much jumping around here in the West. Maybe positioning in the Central. I don't know who's going to come out on top in that division, but I think everything is pretty firmly set. I think Vegas has the Pacific outright won. Edmonton and LA will face off in the playoffs. And then Seattle's got the first wild card position. I think we can lock in mostly the West, except for the Central. That'll be exciting to see how that shakes out. But again, Calgary, it's frustrating. It is very, very frustrating. We'll get Luch on the show again, see if he'll come on and talk about what happened. You lose, like, how do you lose those games at the end of the game? The Chicago Blackhawks, the Vancouver Canucks, a crucial game against the Nashville Predators. A big issue with them is they always give up the first goal. They seem to always come up flat. They're always chasing the game. And then they're just scratching to try to get back into the game. And then the third period, they find their legs, and then it's too late. So something needs to change there. All these guys are locked into pretty big contracts coming next year. Huberto is going to walk into a $10 million deal. Uyghur's deal's kicking in. So you're not changing the faces. You got to figure out something in Calgary. All right. What else, Tim?
Yeah, we talked about Taze last week, and he finally spoke about his final days in Chicago. And Taze is one of those guys where if he says something, you can believe it. Same with like a Bergeron or a Crosby, because they don't speak that mind that often. So when he says something, you can believe it, it's going to be true. And he said, quote, for myself, I'm taking it as if these are my last games in Chicago. Not clear yet whether he intends on retiring. You think he won't. A lot of people think he will. But it's probably clear that he's got maybe two games left in Chicago as a Blackhawk and then a decision in the offseason. But he did speak on that.
Yeah. I think the writing's on the wall. The good thing is the end of the sentence. These are my last games in Chicago. So he plans on playing next year. It'll be exciting to see where he goes in the offseason. Does he stay in Winnipeg, hometown team, hometown kid, maybe revamp the Jets, get rid of Pierre-Luc Dubois, bring in Johnny Taves for that third line center role. But yeah, good for him. The guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer. It's sad to see his career kind of go this direction with the injuries, It's just too bad with the health. But yeah, good for him. Good on Chicago, kind of letting him play out the last few games. And we'll see where he goes. That'll be exciting to see where he ends up. Because I think, unlike other friends of the show, as Patrick Marleau, Joe Thornton, he has some more in the tank that he can contribute. He's going to go in. I could see him easily putting up 50 points, being a huge part of a locker room. I think he still has that in him because he hasn't played. I think he's still got some fresh legs if he just figures out this whole COVID junk that he's going through. But yeah, I don't know. He's a legend. One of the best who ever put on the Blackhawk sweater.
Another cool moment over the weekend. Friend of the show, Jason Demers, was at 699 NHL games, and he was playing in Bakersfield, AHL. And he got called up by the Oilers to play his 700 game, the kind of a little bit of a milestone for him. And he was against the Sharks too. So he got to be there with a bunch of his old buddies and everything. Really cool moment. Logan Couture spoke about how appreciative he was. And Demers tweeted out at both teams after. It was a cool moment for a guy who thought maybe his NHL career was over and come back and get the spotlight for one special night.
Yeah, it's the Oilers coach, Jay Woodcroft. He was the assistant coach in San Jose. So he's been with Demers for years. And so it was a really special moment. Daddy, I called him Daddy because that was his nickname. I don't know why people just called him Daddy, but it's good for him. 700 games. You know what I mean? That's nothing to blow smoke at. I think he hadn't been in the NHL for over 2 years. So we saw he went to Russia. We talked to him. He went to the World Championship. So the Olympics, you know, kind of resurrected his career, stuck with it. Not a lot of guys would do that, you know, kick around, play in the AHL, get your last chance one game. So good for him. He was minus one. So, but we won't talk about that. I'll text him on the side.
We would never mention that on the show.
We would never mention that. That would be just very petty, but good for Jason Demers and nice for Logan Couture to kind of call it out. Cause they're very good friends. Those two guys, like Daddy, when he was in San Jose, he was a glue guy more so than me. I you know, hung my hat on that. Good locker room guy. He was the best locker room guy you could ever have. Never had a bad day in his life, always coming in, making guys feel comfortable, making the atmosphere loose. And he just was such a good guy. I don't know how else to explain it, but in that room, even with a guy like a Joe Thornton, Jason Demers was much more just amiable, like just great to be around. I played with him for one season. I could see him across the room and we can go and have a beer and hang out for hours. That's just the type of guy he is. He's just a very down-to-earth, fun guy to be around. So good for him. 700 games. That's a quite the accomplishment. All right, Tim, what else?
Bo Horvat's been in the news this week. I pulled out the stat. He had 31 goals in 49 games with Vancouver. Really hot start to start the season. I think at one point he was top five in goals. And since being traded, he's had 7 goals in 27 games with the Islanders, which is kind of disappointing. That's not what they thought they would get. But what's even more interesting, they had a big win the other night and in Long Island. And he was interviewed after the game about the atmosphere, the fans, the energy. And he said, it's better than Vancouver. I don't mind telling you that. And so the Canucks fans are pissed, obviously. And they're calling him out. There's some bar that has like a FU Horvat sign outside it now. Like there, and then he had to clarify at the next game. I didn't mean against them personally. When I said that it's better than Vancouver, I didn't mean that. But he had to kind of walk it back. I have no problem with that. I mean, I'm sure it's not nice to hear, but.
Yeah. Don't apologize.
It's honest.
Yeah. Don't apologize. I hate that. It's like, why? Just because a couple people got upset. No one's allowed to be upset these days. No, Vancouver sucked. It wasn't fun to play there. Just say it. It was too intense. Our teams were garbage. And it's fun to be in the New York Islanders. Are we not allowed to offend people anymore? Is that the age we live in? No one can get upset. Everybody has to feel good. And I hate that he apologized. I hate it. I saw that. I read that. I was like, don't apologize, Bo. This is how it should have went. He should have made the comment. The next day, he should have came back. And the reporter was, you're getting a lot of bad, you know, feedback from Vancouver. And Bo should have went, so what? And that should have been it. Well, they're really upset with how you said, you know, it's a little better Vancouver. It is. So what?
You know,
they're really upset at you, Bo. I don't care.
I'm sure this is something you've learned being married for so long, but like, I'm sorry you feel that way is not an apology, right? It's like you're conceding something, but you're not actually saying the words. I'm sorry. You're saying how you're reacting is the problem, not what I said. That's what he should have said. Vancouver Canucks fans, if you're upset, I'm sorry that you feel that way.
No, don't even say the words "I'm sorry," because then some people could just take it and be like, "Oh, he's sorry." People need to just not have their feelings wrapped up into everything all the time and to think it's just like a personal attack. He was more commenting on how great it is on the island, right? It's like, it's fun. We're in the playoff chase. And then people just get people look to get upset these days. Instead of looking for the good in things, they look to, oh, how can I be upset at this? How can I ruin this guy's day and make him apologize to me? Because I want to be the victim. Since when is it good to... that's a whole other thing. Why is it good to be a victim? I don't understand. It used to be like a bad thing to be a victim. Now it's great. Everybody wants to be the victim. It's like, ugh.
Yeah. He even said in his statement, it's one of those things where my emotions got the best out of me. It's like, no, it didn't. No, it didn't. You were just
honest. You're telling the truth.
Yeah. You were honest for a second, and then you have to regret it.
That's exactly what it is. You were honest, and you should not have been. You always have to lie. You just have to tell them what they want to hear. Oh, I love Vancouver, and I love the New York Islanders. I love everything. All the fans are the best, and all the cities are the best, and I'm just so happy to be anywhere. Thank you. I'm so happy for my time in Vancouver when we were just a train wreck, and the fans hated us, and they wanted to be traded. It was great. But now I'm gone, and I got to say, they were so great. Everything was fantastic. Butterflies, rainbows. Ugh, it's exhausting, Vancouver. All right, they have good sushi, though. Oh, incredible sushi.
You never mentioned that.
That was, as soon as we saw the coastline when coming down, we're like, let's go. Like, as soon as we hit the tarmac, we'd get to the hotel, Four Seasons, of course. We dump our bags. We wouldn't even change, right to the sushi bar, and we would just be there gorging ourselves in fresh caught tuna, salmon, all this. I can't eat crustacean because I get sick, but the other guys were doing lobsters and shrimp. And Tim, you've never experienced sushi until you go to Vancouver and get sushi there. Like, one of the rolls is called a tuna rocket. Beautiful display. It's like a cone and stuff with tuna and sesame seeds and some wasabi sauce. Oh my gosh,
we gotta reach out to this place and get them to be a sponsor.
They wouldn't even give me the time of day. They don't need it. They don't need to advertise. They're so good, and it's a beautiful restaurant overlooking the ocean. Like, there's fire pits everywhere, and you're dropping at least a couple $100 if you're going to do this the right way, because you want to do a little sake, right? The sake's delicious. You want to get a little beer, Sapporo or a nigiri, and we want to have yourself a time. That's so good. That's what I miss about playing in the NHL. Stuff like that, going out to eat. The experience of it, sitting around with the boys. It's just, I miss it. We were driving to church the other day, and it's like a half an hour drive. And the whole drive, all they were talking about was Easter dresses. The whole drive. Am I going to be able to wear one of those Easter hats? I want to wear the one with the flowers. I want the frills. I want this. I want the sweater. I want the sandals. I want the shoes that I can show my toes. I'm just like, the whole time, like, what am I doing? This is my life. And I'm just like, this is so incredibly boring to me. I want to just like drive this car off the road into the ditch just so I can just get out of this conversation. It's maddening. It honestly is mad. No interest in this stuff whatsoever. Should I do a French braid? Should I do a high? Should I do a low? What kind of, should I wear a bow or should I wear a headband? It's like, ugh.
Is this only among the kids or is Danielle also?
Oh, Danielle's right into it. Yeah, she's involved because she wants them to look nice for Easter. Then they get to me, Dad, what are you going to wear? I'm like, the same thing I wear every Sunday. Maybe I'll put a tie on, you know, just, oh, that'll look nice. I'm like, you don't care about what it's so like this. It's so feminine. I miss just having the guys talk or like, you know, I do miss it. I miss it a lot, but it's okay to miss things. It's okay. But anyways, we got to get a little trivia here, Tim, the last one.
Just a little something that cooked up. Yeah, there's two players in the NHL right now that have 100 plus penalty minutes and more than 75 points. Who are they? Don't look.
Well, I think the first player that comes to mind is a Brad Marchand. Does he have 75 points? I know he was injured, so I don't know, but is it him?
No, he doesn't have 100 plus PIMs either.
And then the other player I was going to say would be Matthew Tkachuk.
It's Matthew Tkachuk and Brady Tkachuk.
No, they're brothers. Yeah. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Talk about a complete player, right?
Isn't that nice?
Mm-hmm. I think that's the prototypical player. Put up some points, get some penalty minutes, be effective in all facets of the game. I think it's great. You bring the energy. There should be a trophy for, let's give trophies to everybody. There should be a trophy for this. Most PIMs and most points.
You're the trophy generation, John. It's not me.
Shouldn't there be a trophy for most penalty minutes? What would that call? The Tiger Williams trophy?
Yeah, Ty Domi.
No, Tiger Williams. He's got the most PIMs, I think. Domi has the most fights.
Listen, I just out of curiosity, I looked at the year that Corey Perry had 50 goals. He had 104 PIMs. He had 100 plus PIMs 5 years in a row, the first few years of his career. That's a complete player.
Well, has your thought process on Corey Perry changed a little bit? Just because he's honestly become the greasiest player in the NHL the last 4 years, like just a dirtbag. Or has that been always Corey Perry, but he's offset it with a high-end skill? But now that the skill's gone, he's just a dirtbag, and he embraces it.
When you take away the skill, what's left? It's just
a dirtbag. Yeah. He honestly is. Every time there's a Tampa Bay highlight of a scrum, like Corey Perry's at the bottom. He has to be. And sure enough, there he is. And then you get Pat Maroon sticks his nose in there. The guy's terrible fighter, Pat Maroon. I just, him and Austin Watson, stop fighting. Both of them, stop fighting. I don't, now you got Tanner Janot. I like that. He's hurt though, which could be a big deal for the Tampa Bay Lightning coming into the playoffs. He was going to be a big piece of that team coming into the playoffs. And I want to break into that playoff series very, very soon because it's a completely different animal this year. Tampa Bay is a different team. Toronto's a different team. I know the names are the same, but I just think this is Toronto's year. I truly believe it. I don't think Tampa's got the horses on the back end. And don't look now, Ryan McDonagh and the Nashville Predators, if they slide in, Mac's going to be making the playoffs for like the 15th out of his 17th year. It's going to be incredible, but lots to talk about. Let's get out of here. Tim's got to get on the road, get to New York. I'm getting a call from Quinn Raftery right now, friend of the show. The guy never stops calling me. So I'm going to take this and be on the phone with him for the next 3 hours. I hope everybody had a good Easter. I hope you're having a good Tuesday. We'll talk to you on Thursday. Tim, does that work for you?
I'll see what I can do. I'll make it work.
All right. You will. You always do. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you then. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.